Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking you on a journey really into an extraordinary corner of the Seven Colonies universe. We're looking at the Ephesian faith.
That's right, the faith of the Evo of Olympia. And this isn't just, you know, a belief system with a few interesting bits.
No, not at all. It's presented as this faith that's woven right into the fabric of their reality. It's fundamentally shaped by, well, science, mathematics, cosmic forces.
Yeah, everything around them, yeah. Based on material from the author's blog, this deep dive is really about getting to the heart of it, the core beliefs, the practices, and honestly, some really surprising cosmic connections within this unique system.
It's this blend, isn't it? The spiritual and the empirical. You just don't often see them presented quite like this.
Exactly. So our mission today, really, is to unpack all these intricate layers, this complex religion.
We want to explore how these sort of abstract concepts, things like resonance, geometry, how they're not just theories or symbols for the Evo.
No, they're described as practical, fundamental tools, things that actually shape the daily life, the very existence of an entire civilization living up there on, well, floating cities.
Which is incredible in itself. And what's really fascinating right from the start is how this faith seems built on the unseen.
Yeah, on fundamental principles rather than, say, traditional dogma or deities we might be more familiar with. It's centered on these core ideas, resonance, breath.
And this foundational code that supposedly underlies all existence.
Right. I mean, think about it. Mathematics is a form of prayer.
Yeah. Or geometry, not just influencing design, but acting as a kind of prophecy.
And reading the actual wind as literal scripture. It's just different.
It's a spiritual practice that finds divinity in physics, in patterns. A really surprising blend.
It definitely challenges our usual understanding of religion, doesn't it? It shows how faith, in this universe at least, can evolve right alongside some pretty advanced scientific understanding.
Finding the divine in the structure of reality itself. That's the core, maybe.
I think so. Yeah. Finding it in the underlying structure.
Okay. Let's unpack these core concepts then. It seems to all start with this idea of the breath and something called ether.
Yes. According to material from the author's blog, the origin point, the very beginning, is the breath.
How is that described?
It's described as primordial, silent, slow, sacred, emanating from the stillness of this figure, the guardian.
So not just air we breathe.
Oh, definitely not. It was the source of frequency, gravity, and ultimately the catalyst for creating Olympia itself. This makes breath a foundational cosmic principle, not just, you know, biological.
And that ties into their resonant doctrine, right? The first law.
Exactly. Material from the author's blog gives us that first law. Do not seek to end the breath. Seek to shape it.
Seek to shape it. So it's not about just, like, staying alive.
No, it's about active, intentional interaction with this fundamental cosmic energy. It's about guiding its flow, shaping reality through it.
Wow. Okay. And from the breath comes ether.
That's the progression, yes. And the source explains ether not as some substance you can grab or control.
More like something to respect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A fundamental principle to be honored. It's described very poetically, actually, the first inhale of the cosmos, the last sigh of a dying star.
That's beautiful. And it flows through their sacred codex, like memory through blood.
That's the quote, yeah. And returning to the spiral, which is a huge concept we need to get into. That's all about remembering how to breathe this ether, how to align with its flow again.
Now, this description of aether as the divine feminine made infinite. That's interesting.
It is, isn't it? But it's not depicting a physical goddess figure.
Right. More like
a living field.
A womb of vibration.
a living, breathing womb of vibration that permeates everything. Yeah. Mm. It embodies concepts you find echoes of elsewhere. Akasha, the boundless memory. Spiritus, the breath behind prayer.
And the spiral itself is seen as sentient, woven from ether.
That's how it's described, a sentient structure. So ether is presented as this foundational bridge, this universal life force.
Connecting things like chi, aura, mana, all those concepts of life energy from different traditions.
It's positioned as the source from which those energies arise, yeah, the vital essence. And importantly, attuning to aether isn't just theoretical for them.
It actually enhances your connection to aura and mana.
That's the belief. It shows how deeply interconnected these energetic concepts are in their worldview. It all stems from aether.
Okay, so how does this cosmic breath, this aether, actually manifest the universe according to them? You mentioned the spiral principle and the echo doctrine.
Right. Material from the author's blog tells us the universe isn't built linearly, like a straight line. It's structured spirally.
Through sacred geometry.
Yeah.
And these irrational harmonics.
Exactly. And the spiral isn't just a pretty shape or a symbol for them. It's described as a sentient living structure.
Operating in Möbius recursion, that continuous loop idea.
Yeah, no clear beginning or end, just constant motion, mirroring itself. And there's a specific palindrome, 37273, that's key.
The centerfold, acting as both mirror and motion.
That's the idea. This recursive looping nature is absolutely fundamental to how they see reality functioning.
And the echo doctrine flows from that. The idea that breath or action doesn't just stop.
Precisely. As the doctrine states, this is where the echo begins. It doesn't end. Material from the author's blog includes this warning. Futures feel not from destruction, but from forgotten breath.
Forgotten breath. So losing touch with that core energy, that foundational pulse, leads to decline.
That's the implication. And the doctrine of the echo teaches that every single action, even just a thought, creates a vibrational residue.
It carries weight, stored in the field, not just in your head.
Exactly. There's a powerful quote in the source. A broken tone travels farther than a faithful one, and when trust fractures, it echoes forever.
Wow. That illustrates the lasting impact, doesn't it? Ugh. Every act sends out these persistent ripples through the aether.
It really does. And this idea of the lasting echo is woven right into their practices.
Like the spiral walk of memory.
That's a key one, yeah. Initiates walk a spiral path inwards, barefoot, either physically or maybe visualize.
And at each turn, they pause.
They pause, touch the earth, and offer a memory, grief, joy, something they need to let go of. Then right at the center, they exhale completely, stand totally still.
And a wind whisperer asks questions.
Yes. It sounds like this incredibly personal, grounding ritual. It's designed to interact directly with those echoes of the past.
Material from the author's blog links this, and something called the breath spiral of return, to retrieving forgotten memories, even soul fragments.
That's what it suggests, yeah. It's a very tangible way they engage with this abstract concept of the cosmic echo, making it practical.
Okay, so flowing from the breath and its echo, there's also the pause.
Yes. Material from the author's blog explains that when the guardian vanished, she left only her breath. But within that breath, there was this profound stillness, a pause.
And the wind whisperers call this the between, where prophecy lives.
That's right. The wisdom seems to be, do not look for answers in noise. Listen to the intervals.
So silence isn't just nothing. It's a presence.
A palpable presence, yeah. Mm. One that doesn't need an audience. And they live this. Their outposts, the floating cities, enter ritual silence every 144 days.
Engines off or is hushed.
The whole nine yards. It's not just quiet time. It's a sacred collective practice of actively listening to the between, to that cosmic pause where they believe insight is found.
And the number nine ties into this in their sacred codex.
It does. It represents these breath thresholds, moments of potent potential, of becoming. This is called the pause of alignment.
A breath held, but not forced, held in reflection.
Exactly. A moment of stillness before any resonant action. And if the breath quivers, if that interstate isn't aligned, they actually abandon the right.
Really?
Yeah. Because aether, the source says, has to be courted with stillness. You can't coerce it. It shows this deep reverence, this need for a specific inner state to engage with their practices effectively.
Okay, so those are some foundational concepts. How do they translate into, like, the pillars of their practice? You mentioned electromagnetic field theory.
Right. This is where it gets really interesting, how they blend the scientific and spiritual. Material from the author's blog states they see EMF theory as the actual scientific basis for aura manifestation.
So the aura isn't just some vague spiritual glow.
No, it's understood as both a measurable electromagnetic phenomenon and a spiritual expression of their being. Two sides of the same coin.
And they believe its size is linked to emotions.
Directly linked, yeah. According to the source, the aura extends out maybe 7 to 9 feet during states like gratitude or authenticity.
But contracts, when feeling fear or hatred.
Contracts significantly, down to maybe 3 to 5 feet. This provides a surprisingly empirical, almost scientific foundation for a spiritual concept within their lore.
They even test the aura after death.
They do. Material from the author's blog describes this practice. If the aura flickers a specific white-blue color during the final breath.
That's a sign that the Evo's harmonic field has realigned.
Yes, a kind of physical confirmation of a successful spiritual transition. It's quite something.
Okay, pillar one, EMF and aura. A second, Akashic resonance.
Akashic resonance, yes. This is the belief that the Akashic records function as, essentially, the universe's consciousness database.
The universe's database.
Yeah, an energetic, non-physical space where absolutely everything, every event, thought, action, emotion from all time and space is recorded.
And this influences karma, collective destiny.
That's the idea. It's like this living, interactive archive of everything.
And practitioners can access it. How?
Not just through simple meditation, according to material from the author's blog. It requires properly attuned electromagnetic fields. There's that EMF link again, and specific specialized meditation techniques.
To gain insight, past lives, future possibilities, universal wisdom.
All of the above. And this actually brings up an important point about their society's structure.
Their isolation.
Exactly. Material from the author's blog suggests their relative isolation up there is believed to protect the purity of this Akashic connection.
To stop contamination.
Yeah.
From like discordant EMF frequencies from other colonies.
That's the thinking. So their isolation isn't just defensive politics. It's seen as a kind of spiritual necessity to maintain their signal clarity, their connection to this cosmic library.
The Akashic Vault itself, it's described as encoded memory,
yeah.
Echoing from space-time.
Yeah, a non-local library, inscribed in resonance, not ink. There's a quote attributed to a figure named Kalin in the source.
What does it say?
Memory is not behind us. It is above us, awaiting resonance. And also, the past does not hide. It vibrates. You need only match its frequency.
Wow. So this vault holds totality written in wave truth.
That's the language used, yeah. Totality written in wave truth. And the way to access it is internal.
Through reflection. The mirror within.
Yes, the mirror within is described as the inner resonance field located in the heart center. And getting access involves this complex tuning.
Tuning chakras.
Specifically, tuning the third harmonic of the solar plexus chakra in a perfect ratio to the root and crown chakras. This creates a standing wave, apparently, that can sync up with those Akashic frequencies.
That sounds incredibly precise.
It does. And this energetic alignment is followed by a verbal commitment, the oath of reflection.
What's the oath?
It says, I am not what I have done. I am the echo I choose to leave. I carry the cord of my becoming.
The echo I choose to leave. That ties back beautifully to the echo doctrine. It's a powerful redefinition of self.
It really is, redefining yourself within this whole framework of memory, resonance, and echo.
Okay, this blend of science and spirit gets really tangible, doesn't it, in their sacred architecture?
Absolutely. Ephesian worship spaces aren't just symbolic buildings. They're designed as complex systems. They blend EMF enhancement technology directly with sacred geometric designs.
So the temples are like functioning energy device.
That's how they're presented, yeah. They feature crystalline structures, carefully arranged according to numerological principles.
To amplify and focus electromagnetic energy during ceremonies, channeling these subtle forces.
Precisely. And as we mentioned, these incredible spaces float. Material from the author's blog says they float at specific calculated altitudes.
Chosen to optimize cosmic resonance and protect from interference. Like finding the energetic sweet spot in the atmosphere.
Exactly. Finding that sweet spot for spiritual practice. And the central worship chamber is particularly fascinating.
The astronomical observatory.
A rotating one, yes. Tracking celestial movements in real time. This allows practitioners to literally adjust their internal EMF calibration, their energetic state, based on the precise cosmic conditions at that moment.
A literal alignment with the heavens. That's incredible.
Isn't it? And the temple walls themselves are part of the teaching. They feature sacred symbols combining complex scientific formulas right alongside mystical imagery.
A visual representation of that unity, empirical knowledge and spiritual truth side by side.
Exactly. They even have specialized chambers built for EMF isolation, for deep individual Akashic communion without any disruption.
So architecture is another pillar. What about time, their calendar?
Right. The sacred calendar and seasonal observances, it's another sophisticated system. It follows both cosmic cycles and the biological rhythms of Zugenru.
Zugenru, that migratory restlessness. It affects the bird-descended Evo, right?
Deeply. So the calendar weaves together these cosmic and biological cycles into this complex system, all designed to optimize spiritual practice for maximum EMF enhancement. They see internal and external cycles as totally interconnected.
So major celebrations are timed with planetary alignments.
Yes, specific alignments that are believed to amplify the collective EMF fields. This enables community-wide Akashic communion and enhances prophetic revelation. The cosmos isn't just a backdrop, it's an active participant in their biggest spiritual events.
Like the Festival of Cosmic Alignment.
That's a big one. A seven-day celebration during the annual peak EMF resonance period. The whole community gets involved in synchronized calibration ceremonies.
To strengthen the collective aura. Deepen Akashic connections.
That's the goal. And it's not just spiritual. Material from the author's blog points out this period is also crucial for their technology.
Powering levitation.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early! Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Defense grids.
Things like that, yeah. It shows that spiritual alignment has direct, practical, technological applications in their society. The two aren't separate.
And how do they handle Zugenru in this calendar? It sounds disruptive.
They integrate it. They have Zugenru acknowledgement ceremonies. These are specifically designed to integrate the heightened, sometimes difficult electromagnetic states experienced during these migratory cycles into community spiritual practice.
So they don't just suppress it, they work with it.
They see the intense energy during Zugenru as actually powering enhanced Akashic communion and strengthening prophetic capabilities. It shows that all EMF phenomena, even the disruptive biological ones, are seen as sacred and can be worked with.
So the key insight here is really that their spiritual life is just completely tied into measurable scientific biological cycles. Faith isn't separate from the physical world at all.
Not in the slightest. It's found within its patterns and forces.
Which brings us to the very language they use to understand all this. Math, geometry, and the sacred codex. This codex seems central.
It absolutely is. Material from the author's blog reveals the sequence. 1246937273. 9642199.
Just numbers.
Not just numbers. It's presented as the code of cohesive reality itself, revealing the fundamental math of Aether.
Okay, let's break that down. What does the source tell us about the math inside that sequence? The palindromes 1246 37273 6421.
They represent feedback loops, infinite returns, recursive breath loops, reflecting that cyclical nature of the universe we talked about. Their night rituals, for example, are specifically aligned with that central 37273 palindrome.
And the nines.
Those aren't just numerals. They're the breath thresholds, the moments of becoming, specifically that pause of alignment you have to take before any resonant action.
Crucially, you mentioned key mathematical constants emerge from this, like phi pi square roots.
Yes, the golden ratio, pi 1535. These fundamental irrational harmonics and ratios emerge within the codex's geometry. For the spiral-born Evo, these aren't just abstract math.
They're like prayers in numeric form.
That's how it's put. There's a quote, "Breath is not counted. It is calibrated to the memory of the stars." It links these numbers directly to cosmic origins.
And that central palindrome, 37273, when reduced by digital root.
It yields this repeating rhythm, 494949. This rhythm is described as the pulse of creation itself, the breath of golden symmetry, the fractal signature of divine architecture.
Like the fundamental beat of reality. Wow.
And material from the author's blog really emphasizes the codex isn't just a static sequence you read. It's a harmonic blueprint, a living algorithm or structure.
The spiral-born don't just read it, they enter it. through breath and movement.
And silence, yeah. It's described as an unfolding intelligence. It reveals truth only to those who align themselves with its pattern. Its segments have geometric intention. The myriad sequences are like spiritual choreography guiding aether.
Is there a specific ritual for aligning with it?
Yes. Material from the author's blog details their breath alignment ritual. It's incredibly precise. You inhale on counts 1, 2, 4, 6, hold for 9. Then there's a more complex bit. Inhale 3, hold 7, inhale 2, exhale 7, rest 3. Then inhale 6, exhale 4, hold 2, release 1, and finally, hold 9 again, and you repeat that twice.
And you whisper something.
At each threshold, the initiate whispers, "I spiral, and I return."
That's intense. There's another rhythm mentioned, Meroth's rhythm.
Oh, yes, another specific practice for Codex Pulse Alignment. It involves tapping the heart 9 times, inhaling the 1246 sequence, exhaling the reverse 6421 sequence.
While visualizing the Codex spiraling.
Exactly, and whispering, "I carry the pattern, I return through resonance," repeating it until breath and heartbeat supposedly mirror the Codex's pulse. These are almost like algorithmic spiritual practices, very detailed.
Numerology also plays a big part, doesn't it? The symbolic meaning of numbers.
Definitely. Material from the author's blog mentions it draws parallels to principles found in New Age thought, even biblical numerology. Numbers aren't just quantities, they're archetypes.
Like 1 for unity, 3 for creation, 7 for mystery, 9 for completion.
Those, and others like 2 for relationship, 4 for foundation, 5 for growth, even 12 for divine order, and 40 for testing or transformation.
And meditating on these helps align actions with cosmic rhythms.
That's the idea. Reflecting on deeper meanings. And these numbers are directly linked to geometric forms, too.
1 is a point or circle, 3 is a triangle, 4 a square.
Right. 2 is a line, or the Vesca Pisces, 5 is a pentagon. The patterns within the codex visually reflect these geometric archetypes.
Which leads us to sacred geometry itself, the language of aether.
That's what material from the author's blog states. Aether speaks through form. Geometry is not shape, it is prophecy folded into space. It's communication, not just aesthetics.
And certain forms are key. The Vesica Pisces.
The Vesica Pisces, formed by 2 overlapping circles, is seen as a sacred womb, the birth of form. Then you have the seed of life and flower of life patterns.
Patterns of creation from spirals.
Exactly, overlapping spirals. The dodecahedron, the 12-faced solid, represents the ether field itself, the heavens.
Metatron's cube. Merkabat.
Metatron's cube is seen as this breath-bound network of creation, a bridge to higher knowledge. And the Merkaba, the star tetrahedron, symbolizes the union of spirit and body, a vehicle for ascension.
So these shapes encode principles. Balance, unity, emergence.
They illustrate how the spiritual becomes physical, yeah. Sacred ratios derived from geometry, like in the Vesica Pisces or the golden ratio, symbolize that unity of spiritual and physical forces. Even Tiras is linked to musical harmony, resonating with aether structure.
And geometry can represent higher dimensions.
That's part of it. Material from the author's blog mentions the projection of a 4D hypercube, revealing 3 proportions. This symbolizes how aether's higher, multidimensional order projects down into our perceived 3D universe. It's incredibly layered. Math, form, spirit, all one system.
This whole worldview points towards a belief in some kind of divine intelligence, doesn't it?
It seems so. Material from the author's blog posits God, or the ultimate creative force, as the ultimate mathematician, whose signature is visible in fundamental biological and cosmic patterns.
It draws parallels to fine-tuning arguments. Or Dirac's observations.
Yeah, finding mathematical elegance in the universe's constants. And they see this even in biology, in DNA.
Not just a biological blueprint, but holding spiritual info, spirit DNA, light codes.
That's the terminology used. They even find metaphysical parallels, like between the 64 DNA codons and the 64 hexagrams of the I Ching.
Even chromosome geometry.
46 chromosomes, the 18-degree helix angle. These are tied to universal cycles and geometric perfection in their view.
And the recursive nature of the code reflects divine consciousness.
Self-referential patterns, integrating infinite complexity. It aligns with ideas like fractal consciousness theory, that individual awareness is a fragment reflecting the whole.
And quantum theology, finding quantum physics in the codec.
In the palindromic reversals, yeah. 1246 flipping to 6421. They see this as echoing things like quantum superposition, where consciousness might collapse probabilities. They even draw parallels to practices like shadow work.
It's a faith that truly seeks and claims to find divinity within the language of physics and math. It's remarkable.
It really is. And this understanding extends right out to the cosmos through their unique take on astrology,
which serves as a foundation for the religion.
Material from the author's blog suggests exactly that. A deep understanding of astrology and the cosmic universe is presented as what gives rise to such an advanced religion. It provides this comprehensive framework,
uniting spiritual meaning, personal guidance, and scientific awareness of how the heavens move.
Right. Cosmic order isn't just out there. It's seen as the underlying structure shaping destinies. There's a phrase used. Every being is geared to the wheel work of the universe.
Wow. Geared to the wheel work.
The idea is that integrating this cosmic symbolism through observation, through archetypes, could potentially lay the foundation for a universal religion centered on celestial harmony, maybe even transcending cultural divisions between different groups or colonies.
What makes their system different? The zodiac of 13.
That's a major distinction, yes. They use 13 constellations. Savora, Haller, Zykin, Ishkar, Orokin, Merix, Velura, Sadrin, Luminae, Tark, Kavari, Zephra, and Jurenth.
And each Evo is resonated into one at birth based on the sky's birth.
Yes, based on the specific configuration of the heavens at their birth moment. And this designation is believed to profoundly influence almost everything about them.
Energy, emotion, biology, migration drive, even intuition.
Commutational intuition, yeah. And even dictating specific days of significance for them, each constellation is also linked to one of the main outpost cities and a particular phase of the Guardian's cosmic dream state. It's deeply integrated.
And they have that zero star day.
Right. This unique day that exists sort of outside the regular calendar cycle.
Wow.
Between Jurenth and Savora.
A day of inaction. Just harmonizing breath with planetary memory.
That's the description. A collective pause for cosmic alignment.
You can see parallels with other systems like Western astrology.
Definitely. The 360-degree circle, the 12 signs, archetypal energies, the birth chart as a personalized map, those concepts resonate with the Ephesian sky spoke idea.
The material from the author's blog explicitly connects their astrology to math and physics, harmonics.
Yes. Aspects, the angular relationships between planets are based on dividing that 360-degree circle by whole numbers. This creates harmonic ratios,
which they see as mirroring physical concepts. Resonance, wave patterns, a mathematical basis for celestial influence.
That's the implication. It suggests the deep structure behind it. They even draw speculative links to quantum entanglement, calling it a metaphysical analogy. The idea that distant bodies and terrestrial states might be linked non-locally.
Planetary rulership is in there too, like Mars ruling Aries.
Similar concepts, yeah. Ruling planets imbuing signs with qualities. And geometric patterns are key as well.
Like the dodecagon for the 12-13 signs.
More.
Or star patterns from aspects.
Exactly. They see these as providing a symbolic structure that mirrors cosmic order. Signs might be linked to shapes, triangle for Aries, spiral for Pisces, reflecting universal principles in form.
And this all ties back to as above, so below, the holographic universe idea.
Material from the author's blog aligns with that, yeah. The idea that astrological patterns mirror inner truths, fostering self-awareness and a connection to the cosmos, every part reflecting the whole.
Are there parallels with Eastern systems too, like Chinese astrology?
Yes, Chinese astrology is mentioned as another example of a complex system weaving astronomy, math, philosophy, symbolism, rooted in lunar and solar cycles.
Similarities like a 12-fold structure. Animal signs versus constellations.
That common ground is noted, yeah. Using symbolic archetypes based on birth data to understand personality and destiny.
Material from the author's blog also brings up the 12 stages of growth from Chinese metaphysics.
Right, mirroring cycles of personal development, birth, bath, youth, officer, prosperous, weakening, sickness, death, grave, termination, conceive, nurture, a whole cycle.
And this resonates with the Ephesian focus on spirals and recursion.
Exactly. It reflects that embrace of cyclical wisdom, offering a framework for understanding change and aligning with natural energy phases, each stage holding a lesson for self-awareness.
What's really compelling, though, is how the Ephesian faith connects these cosmic ideas to measurable physical effects.
Yes. Material from the author's blog discusses how celestial bodies' solar activity, the moon, are acknowledged to have documented measurable effects on physiology.
The things we know about. Geomagnetic variations disrupting circadian rhythms, affecting hormones, immune function, brain activity.
All of that. Affecting gene expression, even. And these effects are often more pronounced in sensitive individuals.
And the Ephesians integrate this scientific understanding
directly into their spiritual practice, yes.
Yeah.
They link planets and signs to specific chakras. They use practices of energetic resonance and focus on personal growth to foster this holistic self-awareness.
So it's about actively aligning inner energies with these known, measurable cosmic influences. Physiology is part of the cosmic dance.
Precisely. It's a faith that doesn't just believe the stars influence you. It seeks to understand the mechanisms and actively work with them.
Amazing. So how is this incredibly intricate faith actually lived out in Olympian society? You mentioned the wind whispers.
Yes, they're central. Material from the author's blog describes them as this revered caste of listeners, prophets of the breath.
Chosen by resonance,
yeah.
Not by birth.
Chosen by their innate ability to hear the breath, that primordial energy, before it's even fully manifested or spoken. They apparently emerged across all nine of Olympia's royal outposts.
And their ascension isn't political, it's spiritual. A consecration.
Exactly. And they wear distinctive robes marked with those harmonic numbers, phi, pi, root two symbols of the mathematical principles underpinning their practice.
They're different ranks.
Yes. Material from the author's blog details various ranks reflecting increasing mastery. Resonator, flow keeper, sky weaver, air channeler, harmonic astrologer, echo archivist.
And the really rare cyclone oracle.
That's the top, yeah. And their main technique is called aeroglyph analysis.
Decoding patterns in the wind itself. Particle swirls, ionize air, temperature drifts.
Spectral light scatter, yeah. They don't just watch the wind, they stare into it. Looking for micro swirls that form fractal patterns, sacred symbols, or harmonic intervals. Material from the author's blog stresses this requires profound sincerity and inner silence to perceive accurately.
There's a quote from Keeper Vero.
Yeah. When the wind turns back, the universe is asking us to answer something we've long ignored.
So it's like this deep, almost scientific method of reading the environment as divine communication, scripture written in the air.
Pretty much. And the faith is also expressed through really detailed rituals and breath patterns.
Contained in the foundational codex.
Yeah.
Which isn't just a book.
No, it's described as a sacred manual of breath patterns, glyph chants, harmonic rituals, geometry teachings. It's meant to be experienced through practice, not just memorized scripture.
Like the breath spiral circle for children. Breathing Fibonacci intervals.
Yes, forming a spiral and breathing 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8 to harmonize their own growth with nature's patterns.
And the whisper ceremony. Entering in silence, synchronizing breath.
Barefoot, yeah. And participants speak in turn, but aligned with Fibonacci's silence intervals between speakers. The focus is creating the right resonant environment for remembrance or guidance.
Hymns are sung prayers. With specific rhythms or actions?
Yes. Calls, responses, chants. The pulse of birth hymn starts to breathe is to inherit stars. We are born in spirals. Others have specific breath cycles, like 301 for the pie bloom hymn or claps for the radiant chord hymn.
And a principle, clean breath before sacred shaping.
Foundational, yes. All resonant action, any use of aether, must begin with that 1246 sequence, the measured breath of emergence. Material from the author's blog emphasizes inhaling clarity, holding awareness, exhaling surrender before acting.
Because a jealous heart or fearful mind distorts aether.
That's the teaching. It must be courted with stillness, not forced. And resonance is deeply communal.
Every being is a note. Acting on aether vibrates the whole field.
Exactly. Reflected in that 37273 palindrome of interconnectedness. Practitioners have to align their breath and intention with others, healer to wounded, builder to stone, speaker to room.
Acting without alignment imposes distortion.
That's the danger, yeah. The core ethic is harmonic integrity. The echo must serve balance. The codex spirals out, 1246 and in 6421, reflecting this law of reciprocal resonance. What's lifted must be released. Balance is key.
How does this view translate to death, the luminous horizon?
It's seen not as an end, but a transition, a final uncoiling of resonance where the soul rejoins the ether waveform. No burials, just rituals of light and tone.
The last tone hymn is sung, and if the space glows.
It's believed the Evo's resonance has been successfully received back into the field. Material from the author's blog states it simply, no ash, no grave, only echo.
And the body dissolves into biophotonic particles.
If the transition is done properly, yes, returning to light energy. And the individual's unique data signature, their resonant pattern, is recorded in the harmonic tomb.
Which can be accessed later through echo meditation.
That's what the source suggests. But there's a risk if death is sudden or incomplete.
Dissonant resonance, creating a drift shade.
Yes, a fragmented echo, not described as malevolent ghosts, just out of alignment with the cosmic harmony.
And echo priests help recalibrate them.
That's their sacred duty, yeah. Helping them find resonant balance again. The sacred code scriptures contain these core tenets guiding life.
Like, you do not command energy, you coordinate with
it. Exactly, encapsulating their view of aether. And When the math begins to hum, you are close to God. Just perfectly highlights finding the divine in that mathematical structure.
It's clear how fundamental this faith is to Olympian society, which exists in these floating cities.
Nine massive ones, yeah. Built on the underside of inverted mountains, mobile outposts, basically floating metropolises up in the Lanathian atmosphere.
Impossible by gravity displacement technology.
Advanced stuff, yeah. Manipulating gravity and mass within fields. Material from the author's blog mentions the core components. Dodecahedron generators.
The ones that Willow maintain.
Those are the ones. Plus, superconducting harmonics, antimatter reservoirs. All tuned specifically to celestial geometry. The source suggests the Guardian didn't break laws, just understood them so completely it seemed miraculous. So the tech itself is holy. Ascension through tech is holy.
So engineering is sacred. Maintenance is worship.
Equation is hymn. Calibration is prayer. That's how it's framed. Tending these systems serves the breath of God sustaining their world. Everyone involved is an equal steward.
Priests chanting with the engines.
Resonator priests in Kermoa chant the sustaining breath, a 12-digit formula in sync with the outpost's systems to stabilize its quantum breath, literally praying with the machine.
And the outposts move, following planetary chakras.
Specific migratory paths aligned with Earth's energy lines, heart, root, third eye ley lines. This provides atmospheric nourishment, subtle EMF fields needed for their aura stability. It's the doctrine of sacred displacement. Migration is a spiritual act of returning to vibrational congruence.
And the Evo themselves, children of co-resonance.
Fuse through shared frequency, yeah. With each other, Willow, flame dancers, even plants. Evolution is seen as musical, harmonic. Spiral-born Evo supposedly have cells pulsing with microtones, DNA twisting into harmonic.
But Zugenru is a major challenge, that restlessness.
Huge factor, yeah. March to June. Material from the author's blog details high irritability, raging hormones, males can get violent, females urge to mate. It impacts crime, culture, economy.
It's even commercialized. Medications, confinement cells.
It is. And it creates massive internal conflict for the bird-descended Evo. Their biological need to migrate is why the outposts have to be mobile.
The wind reading ceremony determines if they're wayfarer or anchor, based on air patterns.
Tri-vortex, spiral, fourfold drift, things like that. It's a sacred ritual. If someone falls during it, it's seen as a message from the Guardian.
Their high altitude leads to isolation.
The thin troposphere air makes it unsuitable for most other species, yeah. Hmm. So they're largely isolated, staying out of world conflicts.
But they need resources. Forcing interaction, covert trips to the surface.
Exactly. Stealth excursions under darkness. So they intermingle, but carefully. They use their aerial advantage and stealth to enforce peace while staying neutral. Their alliance with the Lennox for resources is mentioned as symbiotic.
What about their politics? Ruled by a royal family.
Since inception, yeah. With nine regions consulting the imperial family, material from the author's blog gives some recent history.
Queen Kenji. The first mutant genius engineer, King Larvix, their son Da Vinci.
Right. They used their abilities to lead towards space exploration. But then there was a long civil war.
Queen Kenji backed her son Da Vinci against King Larvix. And she studied necromancy.
To preserve Da Vinci's life force, apparently, based on a vision she had, she forfeited the war in the process.
And King Pulsar took over when she went into deep meditation.
Yes, and material from the author's blog suggests Pulsar abused his power during that time, closing borders, ending trade with Carthage and Zion. This period likely had big impacts, given how central the royals and resonance are.
They have a strong military, aiming for their own planet.
Strongest Air Force, advanced space program, yeah. Military services required. And some outposts, Valhallis and Kermoa, are sovereign acolyte outposts, exempt from imperial oversight.
And the Willow, living underneath, maintaining the generator.
Protected from sunlight, yeah. Material from the author's blog describes them as moth-evo hybrids, engineered to absorb radiation, keepers of balance, guardians of the underlight.
But prophecy says they're more than servants. Seeds of a dormant species.
A dormant harmonic species that could awaken into something significant.
Yeah.
It adds another layer to their society.
It's just incredible how this faith permeates everything.
Mm.
From breath to politics to engineering.
It really does. And material from the author's blog gives us some insight into how the author, Rick Lofton, actually created Olympia and this faith.
It started with a visual. Grintake falls mist.
Yeah.
Leading to floating cities.
Apparently so. Then he delved into bird anatomy for migration needs. That research was key, realizing the outposts had to be mobile to accommodate that biological drive.
Olympia was the hardest colony to create because of the anti-gravity science needed.
That's what the source indicates, yeah. The science was a major hurdle, and needing a religion that could blend that science with astrology.
He researched the New Age movement.
Exactly. Incorporating aspects like numerology, the science-spirit blend, astrology, the Akashic record, holistic views, self-spirituality, nature reverence, alternative healing, optimism, reincarnation, karma.
Weaving it all together into the Ephesian faith we've been discussing.
Right. And material from the author's blog also mentions the author created a distinct religion for each colony specifically to help with character development.
So for the Evo, the Ephesian faith, with Zugunru, the wind reading, the willow, the focus on resonance versus migratory conflict, all of that shapes who they are.
Deeply integrated to shape the Evo character in their society. It really shows how detailed and, in its own way, practical this religion is presented as being.
You see why it feels so tangible, right?
Mm-hmm.
The application of math and geometry to their actual tech floating cities,
yeah.
Generators, resonance used in healing and interaction.
The scientific basis they give for aura and Akashic access, incorporating wind and biological cycles like Zugunru into ritual, even engineering calibration as a form of prayer.
It's striking compared to more abstract faiths, isn't it? It's presented as a religion you literally build by, live by. Its principles are integral to everything.
Absolutely. And because it's so detailed, so practical in its integration, and has this unique blend of empirical science, within its fictional context, of course, and spiritual belief.
With its complex cosmology, systematic practices linked to phenomena.
It offers a really rich case study. Material from the author's blog suggests it could potentially be studied in theology outside the franchise.
As a case study, comparative theology, science and religion intersections in fiction.
Exactly. It presents a fascinating model.
Now, thinking about the current storyline undertones, material from the author's blog mentions Queen Kenji's state, stirring in the vault.
Yes, in Act 7. She stirred, exhaled, gave a final dream directive. Her proxy, Kai Iaros S, pulsed. This was after she became incapacitated in meditation, which is when King Pulsar's rule began.
And given how much the faith relies on resonance, alignment, collective harmony, leadership like the queen as a conduit,
well, disruptions to that harmony, or the prolonged absence of a central figure like the queen, based purely on the principles of the faith itself.
It would inherently impact the collective resonance,
mm-hmm.
The faith of the people.
Logically, yes. A faith built on interconnected vibration and leadership as a channel for cosmic energy would face significant challenges and shifts when those elements are disrupted. It provides a really interesting backdrop for understanding the current state of Olympia and what its people might be experiencing.
So, thinking about all of this, the breath, Aether, the sacred codex, the cosmic links, the floating cities, the rituals, this blend of science and spirit. It really makes you think, doesn't it?
It really does.
How might applying concepts like resonance or just being more aware of cycles change your own perspective? What does it mean to find sacred patterns in math or even just in breathing?
How does this blend of science and spirituality challenge or maybe affirm your own views on reality?
Lots to ponder. Bridging worlds that often feel very separate.
Definitely.
Well, if you're as fascinated by this universe as we are, you really should explore more of the seven colonies.
Absolutely. You can dive deeper into the history, the other colonies, and intricate lore like this Ephesian faith at the Seven Colonies website.
And get ready. The first narrative installment, Vol 1, the Commencement Day Massacres, is releasing in July 2025.
Mark those calendars.
Okay, that wraps up our deep dive into the Ephesian faith of the Evo of Olympia. We've covered a lot of ground.
From the primordial breath and aether.
To the sacred codex, blending math and geometry.
Navigated their unique 13 constellation astrology.
Seen its practical integration into Olympian society.
And peeked into the rituals of the wind whisperers.
It's a belief system where the cosmic is biological, the mathematical is mystical.
And spirit is found right there in the structure of reality itself.
So here's a final provocative thought for you to carry with you. If reality itself is built on a fundamental code of resonance and geometry,
what profound underlying patterns might be guiding our own lives, just waiting to be discovered?
Maybe through deeper attention and the simple act of breath.
Dive deep.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.